What if you could learn more about your health in under an hour? The Pronuvo Whole Body Scan gives you a comprehensive look at your health, screening for over 500 conditions, including many solid tumors as early as stage one. High-quality imaging, no radiation, no contrast. Book your scan today at Pronuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com. Gain clarity, confidence, and peace of mind with Pronuvo. Invest in your health today. Visit Prenuvo.com. That's Prenuvo.com.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.
This is CX of M Radio, the voice of customer experience professionals.
This is your host, Darren Hood. Thank you for taking the time to join me on today. A special welcome, as always, to those of you who are listening to the podcast for the very first time. Folks, we are closing in on episode 100. I want to celebrate that. I'm really excited about that. I'm very, very appreciative to Michigan State University, who gave me the opportunity, who approached me and asked me to do this podcast through the CX of M Radio Network. So a huge shout out to the CX of M Radio Network. And I'm just pretty happy, just early, I'm celebrating closing in on 100 episodes and closing in on 2 years. So really happy about that. But back to the topics at hand. We are continuing to move forward in our series about emotional intelligence and UX. I've had an absolute ball doing this series. I have received more feedback about this series and about anything else that I've done on the podcast. So I'm really happy to be able to help people, happy to be able to impact people. And most importantly, I'm really happy to provide some representation for the discipline that takes the discipline of UX forward. That is my goal. That's why I'm here. That's what I want to drive. It's not about me at all. It's all about the discipline of UX, that people will be more equipped, more aware, and more in a position to thrive and to excel at what we all do and love. So we're going to move forward. We wrapped up the portion on EQ, UX, and social media. And then we had another segue, if you will. And we had Shanae Chapman on last week. Received some great feedback about that as well. Shanae was a great guest. All of my guests have been fantastic, and I appreciate that. And I'm looking forward to additional sessions, guest sessions that are coming up in the very near future. We're in the process now of trying to line up more of those, especially when we're done with this series. It is my custom to, after I'm done with the series, to do something else that's a little bit off the beaten path, in the sense that maybe that's not accurate to call it that, but I think you know what I mean. After I'm done with the series, I don't want to dive back into another series. I think it's good to take a break from a topic that we're giving a long amount of coverage to. So we're going to be lining up some guests. I'm about to have those sessions and record those sessions now. And then I'll have some little 1 week or 2 week things that we're going to do just to take the overall addressing of things in the world of UX, taking the time to address those things and bring those things to light. And as always, and this is something that's going to be really important for those of you who are new to the podcast, you may wonder why on the podcast I don't spend a lot of time talking about the work that we actually do, when actually I do talk about the work sometime. I just don't talk about it a lot. And the reason for that is there is already no shortage of addressing how to do the work in UX. There are, however, a lot of nuances and a lot of other things that are related to the work. And these things impact what we do, how we do it, how we represent the discipline, how we manage UX maturity level, just a whole host of other things that are extremely critical to us today. So that's why we do what we do. We will talk about the work every once in a while, but for the most part, we do spend time talking about the things that nobody else pretty much wants to talk about at all, including a lot of things that are unpopular. And I tell people all the time, I'd rather have you know about certain things that are going on in UX that are not necessarily associated with the work, but directly related to what we do. It's better for you to hear about it than to experience it and then be blindsided, not have a point of reference and not know what to do. So we cover all of these things. I mean, I have never heard anybody else, I'm sure somebody's doing it somewhere, but I've never heard anybody else talk about the relationship between emotional intelligence and the discipline of UX and how it ties into the work and the things that we do. And we need to know these things. We need to deliberately cultivate our EQ so we can be better at it and then drive and foster the benefits that come from excelling in EQ in conjunction with our UX. So hence, that's why we're covering the topic that we're going over now. Now we're going to move out of EQ, UX, and social media into another subtopic. However, this one is related to an extent to that subtopic. And this week, for as we get ready to wrap this series up, we want to talk about UX, EQ, and the sociopath. So we're not landing too far away from the other topic. And again, this is going to be pretty raw. I'm going to talk about some things in this segment that are probably going to be uncomfortable for some people. But again, you need to know. We need to be in a position to manage these things. We need to be good at identifying the things that I'm about to go over so that we can manage ourselves, so we can be better at what we do, and to make sure we're not someone who's perpetrating these things in our own lives, that these things are not emanating from us as individuals. It's really critical. And that's part of the self-awareness part of EQ. If you're doing something, if any of us is doing something that's off base, it's critical that we know that so that we can recover ourselves from that, so we're not doing that. So that's not a part of who we are. You'll understand everything as we go through it. So sociopathy, we already talked about how EQ and UX and social media come together, and there's a meeting of those three elements that does impact the discipline. One of the reasons that that's happening, and the tie-in to what we're going to go over in this episode, is that a lot of what's happening in social media today is driven by what is being observed in the masses and what's happening at the relationship level, whether it's social media, as we talked about in the recent weeks, as well as the different relationships that are taking place inside of our organizations at our meetups, in that one-on-one interpersonal connectivity that we have that might not be in the public eye, such as social media, although we are going to talk about that a little bit as well. And one of the things that I've observed is that at one time, and I've talked about this before, there was a time where people didn't even know. A lot of us who were getting into UX in the earlier days, the vast majority of people that I have ever talked to and that I have heard stumbled into the work that we now call UX. It may have been interaction design at one time. It may have been information architecture at one time. It may have been human-computer interaction at one time. But now it's all basically, it falls under that umbrella of UX. A lot of us stumbled into it. A lot of us, we didn't sit there in 2000 and decide that you were going to go into information architecture because it did not have the presence that was in our sights, so to speak, so that it would be something that we could choose. As the discipline grew and as maturity spread to an extent and different media outlets began to publish articles talking about how this was an up-and-coming discipline and you want to take a look at this, and people started publishing the salary reports and people started saying, wow, you can make this much doing this kind of work, I think I'll go after that. So you had a bunch of people who just happened into the work. You had people, and people still happen into the work today, by the way. That's still a thing. People started making decisions that, hey, I want to do that because I want to make that kind of money coming right out the chute. That would be fantastic. And then there are people who got retrofitted in the roles. There are just all types of things that were going on with people getting into UX. In the midst of all these different migrations, if you will, and transitions into the discipline, there was one thing that was happening that was an extreme detriment. And it was that, and I've talked about this in another episode, that a lot of people who get into UX never bothered to check and see whether or not UX was really for them. There were a lot of people who got into UX who didn't realize that it takes a certain type of person. It takes a certain persona. It takes a certain mode of thinking and a certain set of passion points, actually, to get into UX and be successful at it, while at the same time furthering the desirable perceptions associated with UX. So yet people getting into the work, making it look bad. I have worked at a place before. Of course, I'm not going to say what the name of the company is, not this time, because it's not relevant. It wouldn't mean anything to you. And it's more about the what than the who anyway. But I worked at a company where there were people, a lot of people, they were what I call, and some of you have heard me talk about before, I talk about retrofits, upstarts, and posers, these three classifications of people who happen into UX roles in some way, form, or fashion, that their operation as UX professionals and their impact is actually detrimental, highly detrimental to the discipline. And so I worked at this company where there were people who pretty much got retrofitted into UX roles. Their interest was genuine for the most part, but there was a lot of things about the discipline. I know this in retrospect. There were a lot of things about the discipline that they did not know. And they did not know how to execute the EQ part of it. They had no knowledge of it. And so long story short, they had a lot of detrimental impact upon the perception of UX in the organization. So they're here doing the work. They are being very dogmatic. They are just trying to, when they make recommendations, it's like it was their way or the highway. There was no diplomacy. There was no participatory factors that were being applied. They would make one recommendation. They would get upset when people didn't like it. And truth be told, a lot of us went through those growing pains. So I'm not casting aspersions on those people and what happened to them at all. A lot of us have been in that same exact position. We've experienced that. We've seen it. But what happened, I'm just telling you the facts so you can understand what I'm getting at. I come along, and by the time I come along and I go to work with some of these same people who had encountered the dogmatic group, who, and again, nothing against them, they didn't know certain things, and they didn't have the diplomacy, and they, of course, didn't have my experience at the time, And which happens a lot at my level. Yeah, it happens a lot. And other people like me, happens a lot. And they'll tell you the same. When I came along, these people had such a bad taste in their mouth when it came to working with UX people that all they had to do was know that UX was going to be involved in the project, and resistance began and people began to tense up and people they were already pushing back and didn't want UX to be involved. But here comes Darren anyway. Darren's getting involved in this project. And Darren has comments about different things, and people they just in their mind they just didn't want to hear it. And that was what was going on in their mind. So we actually come into the meeting. I come into the meeting, and one person, the PM, who had worked with me before, and he had a good experience working with me. Other people on the team did not have the same experience. Some of them had experience with the others. Figured that I was going to be exactly the same as the other people. They didn't think they were going to get anything different. And again, they were resistant. So I come into the meeting, he brings me in, and I sit, and the first thing I do is listen. They did not expect that at all. They did not expect that at all. And when all was said and done, I kept listening to their stories, listening to what they were trying to accomplish. I wanted to understand the requirements. I wanted to understand what design problem we were trying to solve. I wanted to understand what their challenges were so that we could apply the empathy portion. I know, again, some people don't like that, but I'm just talking about it from, and this is an EQ component. It's about understanding the perspectives of others. If I'm going to provide a service, I need to understand the perspectives of my internal stakeholders and clients. So that's what I was doing. The people who had the bad taste in their mouth were completely shocked already. Then I said, let me perform a heuristic analysis, because they were trying to design on their own, because again, they didn't want to be bothered with the UX folks. Let me take a look at what you've done, what you've come up with. I'd like to perform a heuristic analysis on that, and combined with the other information I've gathered from you in this meeting, I'd like to come back, share my findings with you, along with some recommendations. So they agreed. I performed the heuristic analysis. I had my findings, my recommendations. And for those of you that don't know, heuristics are all about common conventions, best practices, proven principles. It's not about guesswork. It's not about spitballing or anything like that. It's about things that we know will work with regard to design. And you can find, depending upon the skill level, depending upon the people involved, you can find up to 90% of what's going on with a design just by performing a heuristic analysis. So this is what I want to do. I come back, talk to the team. I make the presentation, and I added another layer to it. I provided the findings, the recommendations, and I talked about what the benefits would be. But what I also did was I said, and if you follow my recommendations, this is how it will appear within the design. This is how people will interact with it. And it completely floored them. And I'm really drumming on and on about this, and I hope folks appreciate it. But what I'm getting at is that the EQ, you see how the EQ that I applied helped to drive that home. And those people who previously were against UX, not only were they extremely happy, not only were they doing backflips, but when all was said and done and that project was done, they said, can we have you on everything? Which I thought was flattering. It was cool. It's always nice to be able to achieve that type of success when it comes to relationships, because if you can't build relationships, another reason for having strong EQ, if you can't build strong relationships, then it doesn't matter how good your supposed work is, you're not going to be able to impart that to anybody or deliver anything, because your own EQ deficiencies will get in the way. So that's where we are. So I said that to say that all of this, what I have observed is that, and that's a success story, look at it that way, with regard to EQ. What I have observed is that there are a lot of people now, like those retrofits, that was a retrofit story, and the impact of the retrofits, that's why I said all of that also, There are a lot of people who are coming into UX today and they don't have the EQ. They don't have really the knowledge. They don't know how to do the work. They don't know how to apply the work. They don't know how to engage with the work. And this is not, I'm not faulting them either. These are just facts, folks. Don't get upset with me about facts and that's not going to change anything. These are facts. These are things that are happening. But what I have found is there's this deficiency component amongst all the people that are coming in, and they may not be posers. They may not be retrofits. They may not be upstarts. They're just certain things they don't know. And there's a lot of people that don't know what they don't know. But in the midst of all that, there's this other element that I have been seeing, and there has been a rise of sociopathy when it comes to people who are engaging in UX. And so what I want to share with you is just some of the traits that are associated with the sociopath. And there are various websites that I conducted some research on just to make sure that I'm sound on what I'm going to present to you. Because if it's not right, I don't want to share it. I don't want to say it. I'm going to share these components with you so you can understand when you see these things, you very well may be dealing with a sociopath. And there are tons of sociopaths in UX today. And I'll share some stories either this week or next, and then we'll build on that later. But ready? Here we go. Number one, a lack of empathy. People who do not understand the perspectives of others, people who refuse to see the perspective of others, because sociopaths are not empathetic. They don't care about anybody else. They're going to do what they want to do, how they want to do it, and when they want to do it. And that is a problem. That does not work well with EQ. And it is and all of these are EQ red flags, by the way. Everything I'm about to mention to you is that cannot be in play. You must understand the perspectives, whether it's your team members, your clients, your stakeholders, your leadership, everybody. Do you realize that a lot of the people who complain about having trouble finding UX jobs, that some of those traits are actually sociopathic? They're going to interview folks for a job. They're interviewing 100 people, 200 people, or not interviewing, but applicants. They're reviewing applicants. 100, 200 applicants. And you're not the only person. It's like, but everything is about that individual. So when you have tunnel vision and everything is about you, that's not a good trait, folks. That actually is probably good you didn't get it, because a lot of people have a sense of entitlement, and it shows up in the way that the commentary they have about not being interviewed or not being selected for the job and things of that nature. You have to understand the perspectives of the hiring company. Yes, you do. Even though you want to be hired, even though you want to get in there and you want to get your foot in the door for new UXers and things of that nature, you still have to, it's ethical to understand the perspectives of the people you are going, the company that you're going to be engaging with. You have to see it from their perspective, even if you don't like it. Otherwise, you could be already a sociopath or on the path to sociopathy. So let's keep that in mind. Sociopaths have a difficult time with relationships. Now, we already just gave you an example about what's wrong with some UX operations today and how people, they just don't cultivate the relationships. They just don't care about the relationships. But sociopaths are not good at managing relationships, a critical benefit of having a strong EQ, right? So you want to make sure difficult relationships, you want to be good at it. You don't want to be a person who struggles when it comes to handling your relationships. And yes, it is an intricate part of being successful in UX, because you got to present your work to somebody. You got to listen to somebody. You don't want to be combative. You don't want to be somebody that's not approachable. So sociopaths, though, that relationship thing's out the window. Manipulative. Sociopaths are manipulative. They will do anything to get their way. They will do anything to change the perception of a situation as long as they end up on top. But folks, you do not want to be manipulative. As mentioned, it is an EQ red flag, and it is something that does not help or support UX initiatives, and it will make you look bad. It will make the team look bad. It will bring everything down that it touches. But there is a lot of manipulation going on. And going back to social media for a moment, I actually experienced something recently where someone didn't like something I said. They didn't know that I was using a Socratic method to communicate with someone, immediately shot down what I said, made some extremely disparaging remarks, then made some other remarks as if they knew me and as if the statements that they were making were authoritative and accurate, and they were nowhere near as being either of those two things, but they didn't care. And other people were coming along and liking what the person said because they don't know the person didn't know me. They don't know that the person was just pulling these accusations out of thin air, but the person was actually being manipulative. The person was willing to engage in gaslighting. And sociopaths are big when it comes to gaslighting. They're big when it comes to slander. They're big when it comes to projecting different things so that they can misrepresent what's going on and throw smoke screens out there and things of that nature. All of these things are sociopathic traits. So you want to watch out for that. Deceitfulness is a part of that as well. You don't want to be deceitful. Be transparent. Be for real. People will respect you for that. And when you have that strong sense of self-awareness, you're not afraid to be transparent. You just know how to express yourself in a diplomatic and respectful fashion, but you're not going to be manipulative. You're not going to be engage in compulsive lying. You're not going to be slanderous. You're not going to project things. You're not going to misrepresent the situation. That those are all sociopathic traits, folks. Being callous. I mentioned earlier, some people, that it's my way or the highway kind of thing. That callousness where folks don't care. You don't care about other people's perspectives. You don't care about what they're trying to accomplish. Just callous, just overly harsh for absolutely no reason whatsoever. Being callous, another trait of the sociopath today. Being hostile, and I just gave a ton of traits that are associated with hostility, but there's a lot of that on social media, of course. And then people who are not on social media, they just engage with people and do the same. I've told the story, if you're familiar with the comic strip that I have now, I told a story about somebody who was upset that I wanted to start a UX intranet for the UX team. And then they'd say, well, who told you could do that? And just getting hostile, getting controlling, not understanding the benefits, just ridiculous. The mindset and being just belligerent about the whole thing. Why would you be hostile about something that's going to drive the success of the team? Because it's a sociopathic trait. And people are going to do things like that when they're sociopaths. It's their way or the highway. And you find all of these traits in one place. Yeah, you got a sociopath on your hands. And so that person was hostile toward me for absolutely no reason whatsoever. And they didn't stop it. And it rolled out. And of course, when it rolled out, they didn't have anything else to say after that. They didn't support it. They didn't do anything. And it's just really sad when people carry on like that. But these are realities in UX today. Being impulsive, being impulsive is a trait of sociopathy where people have no rhyme, no reason, just heady, just do things for whatever reason, but there's no rhyme or reason. They just do stuff. So this is another trait. We need to be calculated. We need to be methodical in UX. We need to understand because a lot of times we're trying to manage the UX maturity level in our organization. Again, we're managing relationships. We're managing the perceptions that people have of the UX team and of individuals. And so if you're impulsive, you can't be impulsive and then manage all those things that I just mentioned. So it is important that we are not impulsive, that instead we are calculated, we are methodical, we are very, very structured in the way that we do things and the reason why we do things. We'll be better off for it because that's just a bunch of risks. When you're impulsive, you become risky, and then you, it's funny, risk mitigation is a part of UX. It's one of the things that we do. We try to eliminate risks, And so we need, therefore, in order to do that, we need to be able to identify the risks and then have plans, have strategies in place so that those risks don't become realities, because we're not going to do well trying to clean all those things up, folks, at the end. So just really, really, really interesting stuff. So all of these things, I'm gonna cut it short there. I've got other things I could mention, but sociopathy is a problem today in UX. When you see people bragging on themselves, a lot of times you're dealing with a sociopath. Not citing facts, bragging. There is a difference between the two. People who are, again, the impulsive behavior, and then they end up, you see behind that impulsive behavior, they're very unhinged in the way that they are carrying themselves, the way that they their temperament and things of that nature, right behind the impulsive behavior, that is associated with sociopathy today. People who are highly self-assured, egocentric folks, that they do not consider that they might be wrong about something, even when the data might show that they're wrong. And then when they think that you're saying they're wrong, they take it personally and they get belligerent about it. That's a sociopathic trait. Again, folks might not like this today. This is not a topic that's going to give you warm fuzzies, but it is something that we're trying to deal with. We're trying to manage. And again, you need to make sure that these traits are not operating within you. And if you see them, you need to make sure that you manage them. EQ calls for us to manage it when we come into contact with such things. But these are realities in UX today. Let's make sure we rise above it, and let's make sure that we're not practicing it. Let's make sure that we are emotionally intelligent practitioners of UX, and everybody will benefit. So that's it today, folks. We're going to wrap up here, and we should be wrapping up this topic next week. Thank you for hanging in there with me on the topic. But until next week, this is Darren Hood, the host of The World of UX, signing off. Happy UXing, everybody.
Thanks for joining us for this session of CX of M Radio. Be sure to rate, review, and subscribe to the show, and visit cxofm.org for more resources.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences, and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity, and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently, too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial. If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences, and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity, and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently, too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.